like I could tell they really wanted me to go speak at their conference. So ultimately I just asked super nonchalant, like, oh, okay, so what's your budget for speaker fees? Fully expecting, Nia, for them to be like, we don't have a budget for speaker fees. But, you know, I was going through my process, my protocol for how I do these calls. And like, that's one of the questions. So I'm going to respect my process and ask the question. And they come back and they're like, oh yeah, so you know, the budget is like $2,000 to $3,000.
You're listening to The Solopreneur Hustle, a podcast that teaches you how to build a successful solo business while maintaining a balanced and fulfilling life. I'm your host, Nia Lewis, a business coach based in Charleston, South Carolina. The Solopreneur Hustle has a members-only Patreon community where you can connect with solopreneurs like yourself, chat with me about all things business, and get access to exclusive bonus episodes every single week. Visit patreon.com/thesolopreneurhustle or click the link below in the description for this episode to join our exclusive community for as little as $5 a month. You can also text business to 31996 to receive our monthly solopreneur newsletter that's jam-packed with business tips. All right, let's jump into this week's episode. This week, our solopreneur guest is Cynthia Pong. Cynthia is an NYU-trained lawyer turned career coach whose passion is helping women of color realize their ambitious career goals. Cynthia especially loves strategizing with mid-career women who are pursuing unconventional paths. In this episode, we discuss how to negotiate like a boss so you can always earn what you deserve. And we also discuss how to navigate career transitions and change. Cynthia just came out with a phenomenal book that's a career change guide for women of color called Don't Stay in Your Lane. I love that title. She'll tell y'all more about the resources she has available for us in this episode, but we really had such an insightful conversation about navigating career changes as women of color in the solopreneur space. So I hope you all enjoy listening. Thank you for joining us here in the Solopreneur Guest Chair today, Cynthia. I'm so happy to have you here.
I am so excited. Thank you so much for having me.
So welcome. So just to get us started here, tell us about you and what you do. Just kind of introduce yourself to the Solopreneur Hustle community, if you will.
Sure. So my name is Cynthia, and I'm a feminist career strategist. I work with women of color. I specialize in working with women of color who are mid-career and either starting their own business or they want to grow their leadership and negotiation skills or want to change careers or sometimes all three. And, you know, I used to be a lawyer myself, so I did a career change. I was a public defender in the Bronx in New York City for 6 years. And after I burnt out, I found myself having to figure out what was next for me. So through a windy journey, I found my way here. And yeah, I'm a huge fan of Solopreneur Hustle and yourself. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity to speak to you.
Yes, I'm so glad you're here. Now tell us what it kind of felt like making that career shift. You know, I mean, being a public defender from, you know, in New York to transitioning to being a career strategist. What was that like? And what did it feel like coming to the realization that maybe you should do something different?
Yeah, I mean, it really involved many, many feelings. It was scary for sure because I never planned on doing what I do now. I really thought I was going to be a public defender for, you know, at least 10 years and then probably be another kind of social justice lawyer. So it was a little disorienting and scary because just not knowing, you know, what was going to be next is nerve-wracking. And, you know, just also confused because I didn't really have a track anymore that I felt like I was on. And, you know, I know that that can also be really stressful. So there was a lot of that, you know, especially in the early times, just not knowing what was coming and being afraid that I wasn't going to be able to figure it out for myself.
Right. I mean, I'm sure a lot of solopreneurs listening can relate. I mean, in the realm of entrepreneurship, I think a lot of people who end up starting their own businesses come from a place of working at a job, getting burnt out, kind of being unhappy on the job and deciding, making a career change means starting a business. So that type of transition, I'm sure a lot of people listening can relate to. And me, myself, I can relate to that too, because I graduated from college with the assumption that I was going to work a corporate job, and I ended up starting a business instead. And that journey in itself was, like you said, disorienting, confusing. It's scary. I mean, all of the above.
Yeah. And I mean, that's so amazing, your career story and your career journey yourself, to do that, especially so early in your career and kind of just strike off on your own. I mean, that sort of underscores some of the challenges I think are unique to us as women of color, because a lot of us don't necessarily have generational knowledge and accumulation of family wealth to support us like a lot of white folks do. So, I mean, you know, I can't really like make necessarily a blanket statement, but it just in a lot of ways is difficult and honestly more challenging for a lot of us, because we do have to face racism and sexism in the market, in addition to just not having, you know, that uncle to call and ask about like how they got, I don't know, venture capital or something. Right. You know, it's just different. Even if you have a tradition of entrepreneurship, like in your family, like the difference in accumulation of wealth and financial resources is different for us, generally speaking.
Oh my gosh, it's so different. And me, myself, you know, taking the leap of faith to pursue entrepreneurship, I didn't really have anybody to call and say, what did you do when you experienced this? No family.
Exactly.
You know, to find mentors, actually meeting people through starting this podcast, you know, creating this community of solopreneurship. This is actually what helped me actually find other women of color that were experiencing the same things as me. So it's interesting that we don't have that family, you know, family to show us the way. We have to kind of figure it out ourselves. But also, I don't know if you can relate to this, but it was kind of comforting pursuing entrepreneurship for me in a lot of ways, knowing that I didn't have to be a part of the corporate rat race and deal with the discrimination or any sort of like discrimination in the workplace. It kind of felt comforting being able to run my own show, knowing I didn't have to deal with all of that. So that's probably a whole nother conversation, but I could relate to that in a lot of ways.
I 100% agree. And that's why also I think like in this particular moment in time where we're mid-pandemic, middle of a national uprising, I think more and more women of color are kind of just like, you know what? Why go back to what I was doing before in the corporate rat race or working in the nonprofit industrial complex? You know, kind of just doing that whole like wage labor thing. I think a lot of women of color are realizing that there's so little financial security in those areas that you may as well take matters into your own hands and create your own business and build another career for yourself. Because like you were saying, like you get to write your own narrative, you know, you don't have to answer to a white man boss in his 60s or something who totally doesn't get you and doesn't care about supporting you. You know, there's definitely, you know, pros and cons as with everything, but I do think it's kind of liberatory to be able to do that and, you know, decide, make your own decisions. Like, oh, I do want to start a podcast, or like, I would like to shift from the podcast to something else now. Like, you can do that. That is part of the beauty, I think, of it. So I think you hit it right on the head.
Right. I agree 100%. There's pros and cons, but there's definitely something really powerful about being able to write our own narrative and create our own opportunities. So what strategies have you used in the transitions in your career to kind of navigate the change that you've experienced? And what can we do to prepare for change ourselves, especially in the midst of this uncertainty that we're all experiencing in this pandemic? I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people who have an itch for entrepreneurship that are now kind of thinking, well, is it really worth it for me to depend on somebody else for a paycheck, or should I take things into my own hands now? So in the midst of all this uncertainty, what strategies can we use to navigate change, especially in our careers?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an excellent question. And I also am going to ask it back to you in a minute because I want to know what you think. But for me, Nia, like 100% trial and error. So much trial and error and kind of strategically going through this cyclical process. And I talk about this in my book on career change, but there's basically to me like a 4-step cycle. So first you plan, then you act, then you reflect, and lastly you iterate, and then you go through the cycle like once and again. So it's once again, it's like a rinse and repeat type of thing. So I think it's important to be disciplined about using this or a similar framework, because when you feel kind of unanchored and you're not sure about things, it's helpful to have structures to sort of rest on. So like for me, you know, step one in the first iteration of my business was I planned to be a nonprofit consultant and work with social justice organizations, but it really didn't work out. So, but like first, you know, I took actions on that. Like I went out there, I marketed my services, I networked as much as I could. I did various things to try to get clients, but it didn't work. So then I was at like step three, which is reflection. Was I getting paid work? No. Would this be financially sustainable for me? No. Was it time to try something else? You know, something different? Yes. So that brings you around to the fourth step, which is to iterate and think like, okay, what did I learn from this first time around that I can do better or differently the second time around to get closer to figuring out what was going to be the right business kind of configuration for me. So that's really how I got to where I was within my business journey. So I'm super curious what strategies you recommend to people to navigate career changes and stuff.
So for me, a huge part of my journey in entrepreneurship, giving myself a space for change, has involved allowing myself to evolve. So where I started in entrepreneurship more than 5 years ago now is like, I'm not doing any of the stuff now that I was doing then.
Yeah.
Then I thought I wanted to be, like a social media marketing strategist, and I thought I was going to help all these businesses with social media. And then I did that. I got burnout and realized that my fit in entrepreneurship was actually coaching and sharing knowledge and helping entrepreneurs be successful wherever they were. So giving myself the space to evolve and realize that what I started doesn't have to be what I end up doing in the end. You know, where you start doesn't have to be where you finish.
Yes.
And so having that mindset gave me the space to do trial and error, like you talked about, reflecting on what's working and what's not, and saying, okay, I don't have to be stuck in this just because it's what I plan to do. I can come up with another plan. And so there's no right or wrong way, in my opinion, to live life, but there does need to be structure and we have to have a plan. And that plan can change, you know,
right.
Shifting, giving yourself the space to evolve, trying new things, throwing some ideas out the window and doing something else, you know? I mean, there's no right or wrong way to handle uncertainty.
I know. I love that. And I love how experimental that mindset is, because all we can do is like have a theory and then try to test it out, you know? And a lot of my clients are nervous, understandably so, because they're like, but I don't know if it'll work. Well, yeah. And there's also only one way to find out, you know, if you try. So I love that emphasis on evolution and the journey. You know, it's not, I get like this too. Like I focus a lot on like the destination. Like I want to accomplish X. So I'm just going to focus on like grinding until I can get to that destination. But the truth is, if you're always only focused on the destinations, you miss most of your life and your career journey, because it's the journey that makes up the thing. So I love that. I think it's a really beautiful way to look at it. And also on a practical note, nobody remembers where you started. People only look at where you are now, you know, and they're like, oh, that's so great that you like made it this whole way. But the same way that we need to sort of let go of certain things and forgive ourselves for whatever in the past, like, you know, just remember nobody else is looking at that with a fine tooth. You know, I'm mixing metaphors here, but like no one else is looking that closely and they're not going to remember. So it's okay to let yourself evolve.
And, you know, I'm so glad you said that, because I think a lot of people in a wide variety of careers have an itch to do something else, but they kind of feel stuck where they are because they're constantly thinking about what other people will think about them switching careers. You know, I was talking to one of my earliest coaching clients, and she was nervous about switching careers because she didn't know what her family would think, and she wasn't sure what her husband would think. And, you know, it's really interesting how oftentimes we make decisions based on what other people think about our career decisions. But like you said, people aren't looking at us with a fine tooth comb. So what advice can you give to people who have an itch for something else, but they just kind of feel stuck where they are?
It's so funny that you gave those examples, because that's precisely what I was thinking about. And I've had a client before too, who, just like the fear of what she thought other people were going to say and think about her career choices were completely paralyzing to her. And, you know, it's unfortunate because it's not our fault. You know, we were socialized to really care what other people think about us, and for a lot of us to put way more weight in what we think other people think than in what we think, to the point where we're like, don't even know what we think anymore. But that's a bit of a just a rambly reflection on what you were just saying. The feeling stuck is really the worst, and the feeling lost and confused and stagnant. So my kind of advice is three things. One is, think about what you would say to a friend in the same situation, and use that advice to basically coach yourself into moving forward, even if it's a tiny little step, even if it doesn't even feel like it's moving you forward. Like, trust me, you are. The second thing I would say is, think about how can you best problem solve your way through. What exactly is causing you to feel stuck, do you think? You know, is it anxiety about money? Is it fear of failure? Is it, you know, the things that we were just talking about, like maybe having people pleasing tendencies and really wanting to like do what your family wants you to do, fear of conflict with them, stuff like that. All of these are super common, by the way, and might appear solo or in a combination. But once you identify what the thing is for you, the block or the mix combination of things holding you back, then you can actually strategize to a solution, because you know what you're dealing with. Before that, if you don't take the time to actually pause and be like, what's happening? What's causing me to feel stuck? Then you could throw all the things at the wall and still not have the right solution for you to kind of break through. And then the third thing is, hire someone to help you. You know, it is okay to invest in yourself and your career and work with somebody like you, Nia, or like any number of my colleagues or myself or like whoever, to get clarity and help you move forward. We all need help. None of us is an island. And I certainly didn't get to where I am in my career and with my business alone. I had a lot of help and, you know, invested in various things at various stages. Because the truth is, a lot of times we're just too close to our own situation to see the answer. And that could be an answer that's super obvious to an outsider who you bring in and has expertise and has done this before. So don't be afraid to invest in yourself and your business. It will pay off multiple times for you. What do you think?
I think those are all great tips, especially investing in yourself and getting to the root of why you're actually feeling stuck. I mean, many times we kind of just wallow in situations we're in that aren't ideal, as opposed to really taking meaningful action at that, to figure out what we can do with the resources we have to make things different in our lives. And so that takes intention. We have to be really intentional about the steps we're going to take to make our situation more ideal. And if we're not intentional, then we may never achieve the results we really desire in life. So I love that. I think those are really helpful tips, and I think a lot of listeners will really benefit from that.
Yeah, I mean, you summed it up perfectly, like taking the meaningful, intentional action. Something I say to my clients a lot is, you have options. You may not like all of your options, but you have options, you know? So then it's like, all right, well, what's the least, what is the best option out of the bunch, even if I don't really like any of them, you know, and then try to work through it. But it's a bit of a mindset shift. But once you do, you'll be moving and then things will open up, I bet.
Right. It's a huge mindset shift. Gosh, that was hard to say.
I know.
Yeah. All right. So you had a little experience leaving more of a, and I don't know if your job when you were a public defender, was that more of like a corporate setting or what were you kind of doing?
Yeah, it was. So it's pretty comparable to a lot of nonprofits that are pretty large. Okay. So not necessarily the small scrappy organization, but like a bigger nonprofit that had more bureaucracy and like more levels of, you know, just people and stuff and rules and policies. But I also spent a lot of time in court. So that's functioning like within the court system and more like government work.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's what it was like.
Cool. I was just curious. So mm-hmm. if someone's kind of making the transition from leaving mm-hmm. that sort of corporate structured setting where you have a specific job title, you're doing your job, right. and then you're transitioning to creating your own life.
Yeah.
You know, how can we manage that transition from having the structure to kind of having to write our own story and figure out what we're supposed to be doing day to day, just kind mm-hmm. of leaving the corporate setting to focusing on entrepreneurship? What can we do to kind of navigate that?
Yeah. I mean, great question. I think the answer, as mundane as it sounds, is planning. Because planning is going to make you feel secure in the leap that you're going to make. And you'll really have a good grasp on what your whole situation is. And two types of planning I mean specifically. One is financial planning and two, business planning. So financial planning is important because we live within capitalism. We need to have money in order to meet our financial obligations and responsibilities for us and our loved ones. So I always tell people who are thinking of launching their own business to have a cushion that will last you 3 to 6 months. That means, you know, you have this money put aside. If you don't have any additional revenue or income coming in, you'll still be able to meet the financial responsibilities for yourself and anyone you're supporting for that 3 month period of time. You know, maybe a little more than that. I really don't recommend going beyond 6 months because you want there to be a little bit of motivation under you to make you do certain things to advocate for your business that maybe you're not comfortable or don't really want to do, like marketing on social media, which, as you were mentioning before, can be a real slog and like a real drain, you know, or building the important relationships that you need, or applying to get startup funding, promoting your business and your work. Those are things that a lot of my clients as women of color do not necessarily enjoy doing, but we have to do it to build a sustainable business. So that's why I'm like, don't save up a whole year's worth of money, because then you'll sort of like be like, oh, it'll be fine. I don't really need to do that yet. I want you to like hit the ground running, like when you're starting your business. So you want to feel a little bit of that like urgency of like, I need to make this make money so that exactly. You know what I mean? Then the second thing is like planning on the business side. And I'm not sure about you, but I'm not a huge fan of the traditional business plan. I find it kind of clunky and stuff. I don't know. What do you think about it, Nia?
I'm a lean business plan type of person.
Yes.
I actually I created this resource called an Entrepreneur Success Journal, and really it helps entrepreneurs create a non-traditional business plan. So I'm with you 100%.
Yes.
That's my lean business plan.
I love it. I need to really check that out because I bet it would be a really great resource to share with folks. But I similarly have what I call an even leaner business canvas, because I was like, you know, you really only need the answer to these 7 questions. And so that's what I encourage people to go through, because I'm like, You don't need all the bells and whistles, especially at the beginning. So much is going to change. Like you were saying earlier, like you have a plan and it's going to change. That's okay. It's normal. So I don't recommend that people try a business plan, because I think it tends to just get you bogged down and not actually taking any action that you need. Right. But and then the only other thing I'll say on this is like, know yourself. So know what you're going to need. Like maybe you're a person who really does not enjoy structure, in which case, you know, you're going to need to tweak what, both Nia and I are saying, you know, to fit your strengths and your preferences. But you're the expert on you. You nobody else can tell you what you need. No one else is going to be able to know your business inside and out as well as you. So trust your intuition.
Wow. Great advice. And you mentioned some questions or some considerations we should make in terms of planning. What types of questions or considerations do you put on your lean? I call it a lean business plan, but it can really just be, I mean, it can be literally one sheet.
Yes.
It has a few plans on it, like one piece of paper, one-sided, just has some things that you're planning for your business. What specific things do you kind of plan for in that
way? Yeah, I know. I would love to see how closely it lines up with yours, but mine is also, again, one sheet, and like I have a downloadable on my website, which I can tell you all about later. But
yeah, you can send me the link and
I can put
down in the description. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. So, it's the foundational stuff, like first of all, what are you offering? Like what product or service are you putting out there? Who is it for? So your ideal client or customer. What problem does your product or your service solve for them? How are people going to find you? how is your product or service unique from your, you could call them competitors or colleagues? And then the last two are, what income streams do you want to have? And what are your business expenses? So that's the only seven things that I have on mine. What do you usually focus people on?
That's literally everything that's on mine too.
Everything.
It's really the who, what, when, where, why, and how. I mean,
exactly.
So
that's all you do.
I think that's such an effective way. And I agree that the traditional business plan, I mean, for me, it ends up being more of a distraction than anything. You start to overthink things. You don't have 2-year projections.
I know.
You don't know what you're going to be doing, at the end of the year. I mean, it can just really turn into just a big mess. So I agree. I think we should keep it simple, focus on just those seven considerations, roughly seven, and then go from there and take action, as opposed to spending 6 months trying to come up with a 20-page business plan.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I could not agree anymore with you. I'm so, so in alignment with that.
Right. Same. All right. So I think a lot of solopreneurs listening can kind of relate to career changes dealing with or involving negotiation. Kind of shifting gears here. In entrepreneurship, in many industries, negotiation is more or less inevitable. I have to negotiate with clients, especially when I was doing the social media marketing work. I don't have to do it much now because my rates are set, but when I was doing services that did involve negotiation. But as women of color, as women and women of color, sometimes negotiation can be very difficult. We have difficulty speaking up sometimes and really asking for what we want and demanding what we deserve in a lot of cases. So how can we negotiate with confidence?
Yeah. So the first thing to recognize is we do actually negotiate like all the time. Even a conversation is a negotiation. I think it applies even more now during COVID pandemic times. Like say you go to the grocery store, right? Like you actually have to negotiate your way through if there's somebody else, like, are you 6 feet away? Like, how can you get around them and still get what you need and like not totally like cut them off or something? You know, if you think about it, many of our daily interactions are negotiations. If you have kids or you're trying to get a kid to do something, kids are very good negotiators actually. So as a threshold issue, one is to recognize that as women and women of color, we're negotiating all the time. And that actually has made us really good at certain things that are crucial to being an effective negotiator in business. And that's being able to tune into people's energy and their vibe. It's being able to advocate, whether for yourself or others. It's dealing with difficult conversations with difficult people. So the key is to recognize you have those skills from other parts of your life, and then to call on them and be able to use them effectively, when, especially when you are feeling intimidated or anxious about negotiating, if you're in like a male dominated space or a white dominated space or a white male dominated space. So that's the first thing. You already have a lot of these skills. I want you to realize that and recognize yourself for that. The second part of this is three things. One, the mindset shift, which we talked about like a little bit more generally earlier. You have to believe before they will believe. So like Nia, you were saying you have fixed, rates for different things. Like, that's not, you're not negotiating like the exact investment that somebody pays like at a particular time for that service, but you have set that rate for a reason, you know? So like you would be unable to like effectively market your services if you were giving off a vibe that's like, this thing is like, it's $500, but like, you know, you don't really believe in it, and you're giving off that feeling like you don't believe that it's actually worth $500, for example. So like, that's one important thing that I think a lot of us women and women of color need to tackle straight on, right away. If you believe, they believe. It's actually something that I learned from when I was a public defender, like having to do trials. I realized that, you know, standing in front of a jury, if I gave off any inkling of a feeling like I did not believe that my client was innocent, like there's no way that the jury was going to rule in my favor, right? Like they were going to sense. Yeah. Because people really can feel these things. So that's why, you know, this question about how to negotiate with confidence is so important, because if that confidence or feeling of composure isn't inside you, then we'll give ourselves away.
Wow. It's like, I mean, it seems vital, almost absolutely necessary to have an unwavering belief that we're worth it, that we do, you know, exude the value that we know we can offer the world. And it's not always easy, but I think, for entrepreneurs listening who struggle with confidence, it's almost like you have to be consistent at what you do to know that the results that you feel like you can get for people are 100% possible. Like for me as a coach, it took me a long time to feel confident about my rates. I would put them out there, you know, people would book me, but there was always like this feeling in the back of my head that was like, I would get nervous before the coaching calls. Like, I hope they can't tell I'm nervous, and I hope I say the right thing. And, you know, I hope I can really help them. I hope they get the results that, you know, we're working on this week. I hope they see growth in their business. And I would get nervous about these things. And then, you know, the more and more I did it, being consistent at putting myself in uncomfortable situations, the more I started to know deep down inside without question that I was a valuable resource to entrepreneurs. And I'm sure it was the same for you in the lawyer space. You know, you represented clients over and over and over again. And eventually, I'm sure you became more confident in your abilities to defend them.
Yes. I mean, that's 100% true. And I'm also so grateful because now I don't have to say like the second part of my answer because you already said it, which is like the getting the skills and practicing. And so again, this is another one of those sort of cyclical things. Like you got to try to adopt the mindset, but then the mindset's going to get reinforced the more you do it. And that's the more you do it is going to make, you know, the mindset be easier. And it's like all just like a rinse and repeat, like, circular thing. So understand that things like this take time, and that's okay also. But like seeing the results that you've gotten for your clients, I'm sure is that's the evidence for you, right? To then be able to confidently be like, yeah, this is worth X amount, you know, because that's the value that I am bringing. So I just think like, for us to have any chance of closing the pay gap or the wealth gap that exists in this country, like, we as people of color and women of color, we really have to go in there like believing 1,000%, you know, in ourselves and our value in this way, which isn't to say, by the way, that like, I don't believe that we should necessarily conflate like our whole identity and our worth as a human being with what we happen to do for a living. I think that that can be like a really dangerous thing to get too tied up in the two. But it also like, as an anti-capitalist living within capitalism, I also really like want women of color to have more financial freedom and access to money so that they can basically create a better world for us. But anyway, that's a bit of a tangent. You know, yeah, back to like, you know, hardcore skills or whatever, like research, you know, getting the information you need, knowing what is the going rate for whatever it is that you're doing, like knowing what white men are charging for what you're doing, knowing what the other person's budget is, those things are crucial also to giving you confidence. And then getting the skills, like reading the books, working with negotiation coaches, you know, all of that stuff is important. And, you know, Nia, if you want, I can definitely send you links and stuff to put in the notes for that. But yeah, beyond that, you know, practicing, role play with your friends or your colleagues. That's the best way to do it.
Right. And I'm so glad you mentioned doing research, because I went to a conference several months ago, earlier this year, before all this corona stuff happened. And
yeah,
there was a guy there who gave an example of something very similar. He is an international speaker, and he does workshops and conferences for corporate entities and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so somehow through networking, he connected with one of Microsoft's global directors of something. I can't remember the guy from Microsoft. I can't remember his exact job title. But anyways, they needed someone to come in and do some sort of corporate communication workshop. Mm-hmm. And so this guy was kind of just getting started in his career. He wasn't super confident, but mm-hmm. he knew he had some good information to share. And so he said, cool, yeah, I'll do it. This is Microsoft. This is huge. This can launch my whole career. And so the guy from Microsoft said, okay, what's your rate? And he said, now to Microsoft, he said his rate was $1,000 for a one-day workshop for a few different directors of different departments. And the guy from Microsoft said, we'll pay you $1,500 because if we pay you anything less than that, no one will take you seriously. their budget, yep. I mean, they were hiring consultants for $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. And he had, at the time, you know, he wasn't confident enough to say that his rate was more than $1,000. You know what I'm saying? So it's important to do research and know who we're negotiating with, because many times their budget is way beyond what we'd even imagine charging ourselves. And they're out here paying other people triple, quadruple what they're paying us. And they pay us less just because we didn't ask.
Yes. Oh my goodness. 100%. I'm sure every listener like recognizes now that the moment where that person made a mistake was by not being like, oh, what's your budget for this? You know, and instead was like, my rate is X, is $1,000. Because had he asked what the budget was, you know, he probably would have seen it was so far off from what little he was going to charge. And that's money left on the table. Actually, I tell my clients all the time, like, if, because a lot of us too, we're like afraid to hear no, because we're socialized to, you know, be people pleasers and stuff like that. So we get like a shame response if we hear no. So you actually want to hear no in a negotiation, because if the first number that you throw out there, if they're like, yeah, okay, then you know they could have paid more. You literally know there was more money there. There was wiggle room in their budget. And so that's why you want the first answer to be no, and for them to counteroffer you once, at least. And then, you know, you go for something slightly lower than what you said. But yeah, if there's not at least one back and forth, then you know that you didn't get close to their ceiling. And that's important, especially for us.
Oh my gosh. That's just a nugget of information that just like I mean, I just feel so excited listening to that because it's so true. Like, I've never heard anybody present that information in that way. Yeah. But I mean, that's such an interesting way to think about it. And I mean, if you don't hear, we're so scared of no. You know, there's shame associated with no. Mm-hmm. There's anxiety associated with no. We think we may lose the opportunity altogether if we take the risk of hearing a no. But no can actually be a good thing.
Yeah,
we know that we're pushing the envelope a little bit, but at least we get an idea of what their ceiling is and what you know, the parameters we can work in between by just hearing that no, if that makes sense. I don't know. I'm kind of rambling myself now, but yeah, I love that analogy.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It is. And that's the thing. Like, if we can look at negotiation, not like a fight or something over a fixed pie, but think of it as more of a collaborative problem solving opportunity, you know, like to take the example of the Microsoft and the $1,000 guy or whatever, like, you know, they had a goal in common, right? Microsoft wanted to bring him in to teach some things and he wanted to go and teach some things at Microsoft, right? So then the question is, how do you create the conditions for that to happen that are a win-win or a win-win-win, you know? And that's what I like to go for, the win-win-win. But you'll never know what that is if you aren't a little creative, a little outside the box, if you don't ask questions, if you don't listen and you don't do the research, you know? But this happens with time too. Like, the more comfortable you get with it, the more you're just like, you know, it's fine. I want to elicit a no at first. And then like, then we keep talking, you know?
Right. And do you think there's anything wrong with asking people what their budget is? And the reason why I ask you this is because this is a question that I get a lot from my clients. I just want to know your opinion. Uh-huh. They think that by asking what someone's budget is, that is insinuating that they want to charge them something different than what they charge other people.
Right, so, right.
What advice can you give about people who really just feel nervous about asking what someone's budget is?
Yeah. So first of all, I think there's nothing wrong with asking a budget. And if it makes you feel any better to any of the listeners who feel weird about, like, there's a couple things you could do. First of all, I don't think there's any need for you to be apologetic about it at all. You can really just make it part of your process. So you say, you know, like super nonchalantly, like, oh, okay, what's your budget for X? You know, and then if you get pushback or something, like, you can just say, oh, you know, I want to make sure that I can offer something that's within your budget and that is that I can actually deliver on with like the amount that I'm going to have to put into it, you know. Or you could simply be like, oh, I always ask, you know, as part of my consult with potential clients. A third way, if you want to be even more direct about it, and this is one of the negotiation strategies from a book I always recommend. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Never Split the Difference.
I have heard of it, but I have not read it.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the book I always recommend to people for if they want to brush up on their negotiation strategies and techniques. But trigger warning, it uses a lot of examples that have to do with hostage negotiations. So if that's going to be triggering for you, do not read this book. But yeah, so I found it very effective in terms of the way the framework that they put out in this book. And so one of the strategies from there is to say the thing you're afraid the other person is thinking. It's called an accusation audit. So you say something like, you know, I know you might think that like, I'm only asking because I'm going to try to like price gouge you, you know, or charge you more than I would charge other people. But you know, I actually just want to know like what kind of budget are you working with so that I can craft a project that's going to like fit within that budget and also get you to your goals.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, that takes the pressure off of everybody.
Yeah. And then chances are the other person's going to be like, oh, no. I wasn't thinking that at all. You know, because it's just how people, you know, are tendency in these kind of social situations. So most people will deny it, and then they become your ally and your advocate.
Yeah. Wow.
And even if they don't, like, it's okay. Like, you've said the thing. They know you know what's up. And that builds trust.
Wow. I mean, that is such a great tip. That's golden. I think by just saying, listen, I don't want you to think, you probably think I'm trying to price gouge you or something, but that's not it at all. This is what it really is. I mean, that's such a valuable piece of information. And I think a lot of listeners will benefit from that, kind of taking the pressure off. So you're not left wondering what they thought about you. Like you said, they'll probably just go ahead and address it. Oh, that's not, that's actually not what I was thinking at all. And I think oftentimes we assume people are thinking things that they're not even thinking.
Yes. So 100%, Mia.
Yeah, we live in this world where we're always making assumptions about what other people thought, as opposed to just asking what they thought, you know? So
yeah,
I love that.
Totally. Yeah. Right.
Now, can you share any negotiation success stories with us in terms of people who may have been, you know, effective negotiators, clients, or even you in your life? Have you ever had any success with negotiation?
Mm-hmm. Yes, totally. So two examples come to mind, and you'll see how they sort of illustrate the things that we were sort of already talking about. But one was where I was negotiating a speaking engagement. And first, I got an email from the people, you know, organizing this conference, and they shared a lot of information about what the conference was and like how many people would see me and like all the exposure type benefits and how they would like treat me like a rock star, quote unquote, and all this stuff. And like saying that there was no money. Right. So I was like, okay, you know, we'll see. So we set up a phone call. This is critical, by the way. Negotiate whenever you can by phone or video or something where it's in real time. Like, don't try to negotiate over email. It's so easy for people to say no to an email. Mm-hmm. Much harder to say no when you're having a dialogue with them. Anyway, so I set up a phone call. We're like talking about all these things. I'm asking a lot of questions, listening carefully to the answers, building rapport with them, you know? And then like, I could tell they really wanted me to go speak at their conference. So ultimately I just asked super nonchalant, like, oh, okay, so what's your budget for speaker fees? Fully expecting, Nia, for them to be like, we don't have a budget for speaker fees. But, you know, I was going through my process, my protocol for how I do these calls. And like, that's one of the questions. So I'm going to respect my process and ask the question. And they come back and they're like, oh yeah. So, you know, the budget is like $2,000 to $3,000.
Wow.
I thought it was going to be zero, you know? And I would have said yes to zero probably at that point. So that's how a no cash speaking gig turned into 3K.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So always ask. And the second one is one I'm pretty proud of, which is negotiating, getting flown out to Hawaii from New York City with one of my colleagues to teach a negotiation workshop. Yeah,
wow.
I know. It's pretty meta. And also for me to facilitate like a 1-day retreat. So the person bringing us really only wanted me to facilitate the retreat. But they knew us, they knew me from giving this negotiation workshop with my colleague. And because it came up in the conversation, and I was like, oh, well, if you want me to like give this workshop, like half of that, like I created that with my colleague, and like it's her intellectual property too. So like I wouldn't be able to give the workshop without her. And basically we had this problem solving conversation. Which is like, you know, how can we make this work? Like, what do you think we can do? And so I'm asking and saying a lot of how and what questions or statements, you know, like, I don't know how I can make it work. I don't know what I can do. That's another tip from that Never Split the Difference book. But basically through doing a series of those and like listening and all that stuff, you know, we had a very productive problem-solving session and ended up, both of us got flown out to do all this stuff.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool.
Oh my, and then a trip to Hawaii of all places. I mean, what better place to go for an opportunity like that? That's amazing.
I know, it was a big high point in my career for sure.
Wow, that's awesome. So as a woman of color yourself, what do you feel has been the most challenging aspect of pursuing entrepreneurship, and have you overcome any obstacles at all?
I think it was things we talked about earlier, like have that lack of confidence and lack of clarity that comes at the beginning of when you first start your business, because you don't know if it's going to work. Even if you have a very clear vision of what you're doing and who you're serving and why, you know, it hasn't been tested in the market yet, right? So like you can't predict the future. And that is very stressful for a lot of us because we're used to sort of like this is what you should do. Like, then we follow the path, you know, like we get good grades in school, like our teachers pat us on the head, like that, you know, that sort of is laid out. But when you're an entrepreneur, there's no set path, you know, there's best practices and like frameworks and whatever, but you just don't know until you try it. So giving yourself the time, like me giving myself the permission and the time to evolve, like you were saying earlier, and try something new and, you know, say goodbye to something else that I thought really was going to be the thing, but it wasn't. I feel like that all is kind of like the biggest obstacle that I've had to overcome, but it taught me so many lessons and now I'm not afraid of that stuff. You know, I just know it's part of the process.
Right. Yeah, I can relate to a lot of that. For me, one of the biggest obstacles I've overcome has been uncertainty. So I've always really just had an anxiety about not knowing what was going to come in the future. And I mean, that's been my whole life. I've always been an over planner. And lo and behold, I decided to be an entrepreneur, which is like one of the most uncertain career paths I could have ever chosen. I mean, what in the world? But that was my calling and my passion. And so for me, this whole journey has been working to overcome this, like, burning desire to want to know that everything is going to work out.
Yeah.
And never being able to know that. So
I know
it's an obstacle for me.
Yeah. It's so real. I think so many of us have that anxiety and, you know, if we're talking about like valuable lessons learned or whatnot, like you got to feel your feelings and you can't fast forward experience. So there's like, you can still trust and have faith and, you know, reassure yourself, but it takes some level of comfort with not knowing. Otherwise, you probably will be paralyzed, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like finding comfort in the discomfort.
Yes.
Of knowing that you just can't, you can't control all of the moving parts in your life. You just have to be comfortable knowing that you can only control what you can control, and you have to just kind of let everything fall into place. So I love that. Yeah. You cannot fast forward experience. I take notes. Sometimes I forget to say certain things when you're talking and then I have some follow up. And that's going to be a quote somewhere. You can't fast forward
experience. I love it.
You can use that. And then I'm going to quote you on social media, just so you know.
Yes, I love it. And I, you know, I do the same thing. So I feel like we're so aligned on so many things. I don't know, totally vibing with you on all these things. Like everything you say is just like right on. But I don't know, what do you think are the most valuable lessons you've learned for yourself as an entrepreneur?
For me, it's been one, to give myself space to evolve.
Yeah.
I think for a long time, especially taking a traditional path in life, going to college, you know, earning a graduate degree, just kind of taking this traditional path, kind of trying to fit myself into a box of expectation and realizing that just being myself is enough. And especially in entrepreneurship, I feel like oftentimes we feel like we have to be what people expect us to be. And that's in anything, not even just in business. That's just in parenthood, being a daughter or son, whoever you are, you know, I mean, we want to be who people expect us to be. And that's, for me, has been just a very toxic way of being. And so, and one of the most important lessons I've learned so far is that who I am is enough, and there's no reason for a mask, or there's no reason to feel like I have to talk a certain way or act a certain way to fit in with what society says I should be. I can just be myself, and that's enough in my business, in my life, in my relationship, and everything. So that's not directly related to business, but that has really helped me be a better entrepreneur for my business.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's super related though. And I mean, you've talked about this on the podcast before with all the stuff about authenticity and being your real self and sharing that with your various communities. I think it only helps elevate and amplify your business when you're able to do that, because business, as in any other relationship, is at its core about trust. So people have to be able to trust you in order to want to give you their dollars and invest in themselves for whatever your services or your product are. So like that has to be there. And one of the best ways, I think, is to be able to embody that you are enough, like period, full stop. Like even if you weren't an entrepreneur, you got to be able to tell that to yourself and believe it. And I'm still on that journey to that myself. But for a lot of women of color, like, it's revolutionary. You really have to internalize that, and that the world needs you to be you, like, fully you, no masks. But it's so hard to reject societal expectations, familial expectations, all of that stuff, because, again, like, that's how a lot of us were raised too.
Right. Oh yeah, it's so hard to kind of break the mindset of being who people want us to be, and just as opposed to just kind of being who we want to be. Would you mind leaving us with any final thoughts, or do you have any final thoughts to leave us with as it pertains to our careers, negotiation, or anything at all?
I'm going to repeat it. You are enough.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. Yeah. And how can we support you and what you do? Can you kind of share some of the resources you offer women of color to help us?
Absolutely. I mean, everything is on my website, which is embracechange.nyc. And on there, you can find a whole bunch of stuff, including information about my book that's coming out very soon. It's called Don't Stay in Your Lane, The Career Change Guide for Women of Color. And it's going to be on pre-order starting from July 13th, 2020, and officially launching on August 27th, after which it'll be on sale through my website, embracechange.nyc. And, you know, like, I didn't, again, like, as you were asking me earlier, like, did all these things happen because you planned them out or whatever? I did not plan on writing a book at all. I really didn't want to. But I realized that there's so many career advice books out there and career change advice books out there, but they're all written by and from white perspectives. Wow. And I really just think that our intersectional experiences are not properly reflected or addressed in those books. Like, it's if it shows up at all, it's like a side note or a footnote or like one short section. And I was like, not having it anymore. I was like, I'm sick of recommending these books to my clients, and I have to keep saying, like, okay, you're going to have to adapt it to your situation, or like, it's not really going to talk about race or sexism at all, but like, please, you know. So anyway, that's a little story about my book, Don't Stay in Your Lane. So I'd love if people check that out and see if it's helpful to you. It's super practical. You can guide yourself through your own career change with it. I also have a ton of like free stuff on my website. So I've got these COVID-19 career guides for women of color, three categories: job seekers, career changers, and entrepreneurs. So I'll definitely send you the link for that, because the entrepreneurs one has that even leaner business canvas in it.
Okay.
So everyone's welcome to download those. I've got other worksheets as well, and a monthly newsletter on which I do giveaways every other week. This whole summer, 2020, because it's been such a challenging year. I was I wanted to do something nice for folks. So every other week I do a giveaway through there. You can sign up. It's called The Trajectory. You can find it through my website. And then lastly, you know, if you want free career advice through social, I share all that on LinkedIn under my name, Cynthia Pong, and on Instagram under my handle, EmbraceChangeNYC.
Nice. I love your social media content. It's straight to the point. You give so many valuable tips. So I definitely recommend follow Cynthia on Instagram. I follow Cynthia on Instagram, but I'm not big on LinkedIn, but I'll follow you there as well.
I know, to each their own, and, you know, do what works for you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for, be you, you're enough. But thank you for being here with us today. Yes. Thank you for sharing your time with the Solopreneur Hustle community. We really, really appreciate you sharing your wisdom and so much knowledge with us here today. It's been such a pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine, Nia. I'm a huge fan. Thank you so much for this opportunity. It means a lot to me.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Stay connected in between episodes by texting business to 31996. You'll receive our business tip of the week, and you'll also get our monthly solopreneur newsletter. We also have a private membership group that you can join to access group chats and bonus episodes every week. Visit patreon.com/thesolopreneurhustle or click the link below in the description for this episode to join our community. I hope you have a great week, and thank you for supporting the Solopreneur Hustle podcast.